If you've been listening to Team Human, then you've heard about our sponsor, Groucho, the folks who find you people in your area to do dinners and salons with. Well, they've turned out to be not only a supporting sponsor of the show, but also a Team Human utility. That's right. So many Team Human people have been using the app to find others where they live that Groucho has ended up facilitating Team Human dinners in cities across the U.S. And there's people in a bunch of places looking for others to gather with. That's right. Team Human people in Alameda, Albany, Audubon, West Sussex, Brooklyn, Burlington, Chicago, Dallas, Denver, Grayson, Hutchinson, Lafayette, Libertyville, London, L.A., Malvern, Medusa, Montreal, New York, Newcastle, San Diego, Owosso, Philadelphia, Portland, Prescott, Richmond, Sacramento, Santa Cruz, Sayo, Storrs, Toronto, Wichita. So if you're on Team Human in one of those places and looking to find the others, go to mygroucho.club/teamhuman. Use the code TEAMHUMAN for half off the first month. And even if you're not looking for Team Human others, fill out the form and see who the curators find for you. That's mygroucho.club/teamhuman. You're on Team Human, Conscious Intervention in the Machine. A chance to accept the end as a new beginning. To stop fighting the power and start feeling it from the inside out. Today I'm going to talk about apocalypse, that's right. Leaning into the meta crisis for everything it's worth and seeing what's really collapsing and what maybe isn't. I'm Douglas Rushkoff and I'm on Team Human. We're all going to die. There, I said it. The only real question is whether we do it individually or all together at the same time. But there's a pervasive, ambient terror many of us have been carrying for a while now. Words like collapse and polycrisis have replaced more actionable entry points to social change, such as environment or peace. You know, doom is everywhere. It sometimes feels as if there's nothing we can do but sit and hold space for whatever's about to happen. And over the past couple of years, I've concluded that this form of acceptance may not be failure at all, but our most necessary adaptation to a world in crisis. I mean, what if surrender, or even more actively, a full embrace of what's actually happening constitutes our last best hope for at least rising to this occasion? I was scheduled to give a talk in California to a group of activists on the topic of averting apocalypse. This was a few years ago, after Trump became president, but before COVID, if you want some sense of where we were on the trajectory. I was about to get on the plane when I got the news that an elderly family member was back in the hospital with pneumonia and not likely to make it out. She had frightfully few loved ones with the means to attend to her, so I canceled my ticket and spent the long drive to the hospital making my apologies to the conference and cashing in a few favors to get a suitable replacement. And the hospital, it was cold at night. And hours at the bedside turned into days as she went from talking to moaning to sighing to just lying there. There were just a couple of us, so we each took turns sitting with her in six-hour shifts. I seemed to be the one there at 2 or 3 in the morning, watching her and listening to the beeping machine while ashamedly wondering, why am I even here? I'm embarrassed to admit I resented having been called to serve in this way. This was my then wife's relative, not mine, but she was immune compromised and couldn't be in a hospital and exposed to MRSA and God knows what. So I was the stand-in. But besides, I was saying to myself, there's nothing I can actually do here. The antibiotics haven't worked. Blood work shows systems are shutting down. Morphine's maxed. I'm sitting here in a cold hospital room, powerless to affect change when I could be working on solutions with the people who might actually be able to do something about our collective descent into multiply catastrophic crises. Strategic interventions to eradicate microplastics, rising ocean temperature, economic inequality, species extinction, geopolitical conflict, technological disruption, and cascading emergencies. There was no opportunity for intervention in that hospital room, and it pissed me off. I wanted to be out on the battlefield, not stuck here doing hospice without Wi-Fi. But as I sat there, hour after hour, alone in a room with this dying body, something changed. I slowly, reluctantly surrendered to the moment, to not being able to do anything but sit there. And as I did, I began to see more than a comatose patient receiving oxygen from a tube while emitting beeps through electrodes to a monitor. I saw the person who had lived through 80-something years and now both struggling to breathe and struggling to let go. Each exhale followed by a pause, as if her body was deciding whether to make the next gargantuan effort to try again. I knew she was in a coma and unaware of her surroundings, at least that's what the hospital people said, but I figured there was some chance she was still in there somewhere, experiencing her stuckness between life and death, or not even knowing exactly what was going on around her, where she was, what was happening. So I pulled my chair closer to the bed and just put my hand on hers, just so that she'd know I was there. Someone was there. And I may have been overtired, but I wasn't high on anything. I hadn't tripped in years. I was quite straight and quite rational, yet I swear I could feel her soul in there, taking account of my presence. It was as if she needed more than her own nervous system to make this transition. It felt as if she was testing me, like probing me, almost asking permission to use me or enter me, not physically exactly, but even more intimately. And I kind of gave consent, and it was as if my nervous system became an extension of hers, metabolizing the fear and pain. She just came up and into me. It was not a subtle metaphorical experience, right? It wasn't scary or painful, not at all. In fact, I was feeling something closer to warmth, to bliss. I could directly, physically feel her coursing through my body, using me as a resource as she made the passage from this place and out of body to whatever is next. And as that was happening, I realized what a profound gift I was being offered. This was, at least up to that moment, the most profound experience I'd ever had in my life. The same duty call I was cursing just hours earlier was now the greatest blessing and honor I could have ever been called to. And all of a sudden, I felt I understood the essence of what death doulas do. It's not just making the dying more comfortable, although that's certainly a part of it, but on a deeper level, the doula facilitates a more intentional and practiced form of what I had ended up doing almost accidentally. While doctors intervene to prevent a patient's death, doulas show up to acknowledge and help metabolize it. They offer their sheer presence as living organisms to bear witness and exercise compassion in the truest sense of the word. Only by utterly surrendering to the moment, giving up on the possibility of intervening in any way, was I able to be of service. And in doing so, I felt a profound shift stirring in my approach to my life and my work. I was transforming from an agent of change to an agent of care. I had spent the last few decades of my life as something of an activist. The WTO protests in Seattle, Occupy Wall Street, No Kings, strategizing climate remediation, alternative currencies, political campaigns, teaching social justice, theories of change, congressional hearings, making a difference. And at that moment, instead of leveraging all my hard-won research and experience to help young activists strategize how to save the world from its impending meta-crises, I was simply sitting there, utilizing no skill, not saving a life, or making any measurable contribution other than giving up. And in doing so, I was making the most profound contribution to another human being I had ever made in a way that registered for me in an immediate, undeniable way. I am not a woo person, or at least I wasn't until that night, but this was as real as your own next breath. I didn't think I'd like getting sponsors for Team Human, but turns out the ones who actually want to sponsor us totally get what we're about. Like Groucho, which uses technology as an antidote to social isolation, handling all the logistics for twice monthly gatherings between you and a hand-curated cohort of collaborators. It's as if Groucho were informed by the ideas we share on this show, from face-to-face interaction to bottom-up community to localism to the value of eccentricity over conformity. Groucho curates people as if they were being selected for an artist's colony, not clones, but complements and contrasts, ingredients for a collaborative stew. They also take care of all the logistics from dinner reservations to conversation starters. Just go to mygroucho.club/teamhuman for half off the first month. Answer some questions about yourself in your own time and let the humans at Groucho do the rest. That's mygroucho.club/teamhuman. Use the code teamhuman for half off the first month and enjoy your dinner and new friends. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I was just helping a friend who was looking for a psychotherapist. I have a psychologist friend who I trust, but she's become more of an author and media celebrity. So she gave me a list of therapists she trusts. And at the top of her list, I kid you not, is BetterHelp.com. And it's not just her. Check out the reviews at BetterHelp.com/reviews. There's 1.7 million of them, with an average live therapy session rating of 4.9 out of 5. That's because these aren't random online therapists, but vetted ones with at least 3 years and 1,000 hours of experience and certifications across a wide range of specialties. It's easy to get started. Just go to BetterHelp.com, answer a few questions, and get matched with a therapist based on your needs. Switch whenever you like if it's not the right fit. So see the reviews, see what stands out, and see if BetterHelp is right for you. Visit BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. It took a special company to convince me to do an ad for clothing, and that company is Quince. Imagine buying fewer, better pieces you love to wear all the time instead of an infinite scroll of crap. The best piece I got so far is a navy blue button-down shirt, the organic cotton stretch textured twill shirt, and it replaces like 6 others that got stolen from the laundromat last month. Feels different, fits different, and washes great. No crunchy crease in the elbows or itchy seams at the wrist, just soft structure, refined, casual details, no strings dangling. You'll see it in my next monologue. So buy less, buy better, look great. Win jobs, meet lovers, organically, ethically, and at reasonable prices with Quince. Have a closet of keepers, not landfill. Upgrade your everyday. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/teamhuman. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/teamhuman. it has set me on a different course. I don't begrudge those who are in the trenches trying to change our political systems, tweak the economy toward justice, or rescue the rainforest from capitalism. But most of us are simply watching the horror show on the TV screen or doom-scrolling the meta crisis on our smartphones, occasionally casting a vote or standing up for a cause in a difficult conversation. We watch until the sad truth of inevitable doom makes itself abundantly clear, and then we distract ourselves under the false hope that every civilization thinks it's the last one, or that some new technology will surely swoop in and rescue us from ourselves. It always does. What if we took a different approach? Instead of avoiding the prospect of apocalypse, what if we stared right into its gaping maw and accepted what's happening? How would you behave if you really knew this was it? The patient is dying. Might there be a value in entertaining that possibility, even just for the time it takes to hear this monologue? I promise the meta crisis will still be waiting for you when we're done. But what if instead of looking for the next clever intervention to save this dying patient, we show some mercy and begin to offer palliative care? What would that look like? What if we began to care for one another as if we really were the last generations to enjoy the Eden into which we've been born? Instead of competing over scarce remains, we give up. We meet our neighbors, take time to reflect, tend to our gardens, love our children, and do whatever we can to soften the impact of the impending collapse. The outcome may be determined, but we can lessen the severity of the decree. We identify the most vulnerable in our communities, commit to checking up on the elderly after the next extreme weather event, consider what sorts of lives we want to offer children who may not make it to adulthood. Choose whether to spend what hours we have left on our social media feeds. And as we live and love more, we buy and compete less, reducing our consumption, extraction, and burden on the all too brittle corporate and government infrastructure. The abstract universes of finance and capital shrink and lose their power as people slow down and appreciate the places they inhabit and the people in their lives. As a hospice nurse told my own father when he was sick, just because you're accepting hospice doesn't mean you have to die. In fact, if a majority of us assume roles as agents of care, we may not only make the impending catastrophes less painful for many, we may just avoid some of them, or at least create the best conditions for recovery after they occur. Couldn't hurt. We can still leave 10% of us to attend directly to strategizing the meta crisis. That's 30 million Americans full-time on politics and strategic planning, so the other 300 million of us can tend to the daily work of caring for one another as the pyramid comes down. If there's no guaranteed future to optimize for, then the results of our actions come to matter less than the actions themselves. Revolution is no longer an ends justifies the means battle for liberation, but the liberty and grace to prioritize our comportment in the living moment. Over the 5 years since I've made this shift, accepted what I believe to be the inevitability of collapse, and embraced real-time care over abstracted strategy, I came to see our predicament differently. I discovered that what I've been so terrified of losing is not human civilization at all, but a brittle, anti-civilizational illusion with which we've been taught to identify. By letting go of the machine, we can stop fighting death and instead rejoin the living world, recognizing that what the technocrats and the most well-meaning activists among us call the end may simply be the necessary regenerative cycle of life. By embracing apocalypse, we're not accelerating an ending at all, but as the word apocalypse literally describes, uncovering what is real. Yes, things may be ending, but not necessarily everything. The colonial might makes right civilization currently toppling is not a civilization at all. It's the antithesis of a society based on care and mutuality. And as archaeologists and anthropologists alike understand, human evolution owes itself not to competition, but collaboration. Food sharing and group cooperation form the basis for what it meant to become civilized humans. Civilization can best be understood as our capacity to transcend violence and domination as the arbiters of flourishing. Instead of trying to save it, we can serve as death doulas for this anti-civilization, making its collapse as gentle as possible on the living systems it has been exploiting. We can also serve as birth doulas for the emergence of a more horizontal civilization of mutuality to take its place. This requires discipline and, yes, spiritual development. This is not spiritual bypassing at all. That accusation of doing spiritual work as a substitute for confronting real-world challenges? No. Rather, when we jump straight into actionism or big ego savior missions, we're running away from the terrifying reality of our limitations and our grief over what is already lost. We use strategy as a psychological defense mechanism, allowing us to look away from the suffering neighbor in front of us because we're focused on a grand plan to save a million hypothetical people tomorrow. That's like the activist's bypass. Just another version of effective altruism if it isn't checked against the in-the-moment comportment and real-time, face-to-face, body-to-body co-metabolism of the moment. The fixing reflex is simply the old industrialist mindset with a progressive intent. The real human work of accepting our mortality and sitting with grief is not a self-indulgent detour from the political struggle. It's the ultimate guardrail. It's what prevents our necessary rebellions from degenerating into the same ends justifies the means control structures that are destined to annihilate us. I ended my book, Survival of the Richest, with the line, if you're not doing it in the moment, you're not doing it. And let me add to that, if you are doing it in the moment, you've already won. Thanks for being on Team Human. You can join us here in the winner's circle by becoming a supporting member of the team at patreon.com/teamhuman, or at least subscribe through your podcast player or by clicking on the subscribe button on the YouTube there. It makes a difference. Team Human is produced by Joshua Chapdelin and edited by Luke Robert Mason. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, and you've been on Team Human, our last best hope for peeps.